welcome to What a Scream, the horror movie podcast where I, your host, Egrain, chats about horror films with a special guest. And we chat about a particular subject or topic that I've previously randomly chosen, and we then choose two films to discuss that have to do with that subject. So this week, the subject is all about the internet. It seems to be gaining in popularity when it comes to subject matter of films, whether it is focusing on the deep or dark web, or whether it's to do with social media, or how social media have kind of sculpted our landscape, especially when it comes to personalities like vloggers or social media influencers. So it is a really interesting topic, I guess. So my special guest this week is David Smith, and together we are chatting about 2019's Scottish found footage film, Death of a Vlogger, as well as 2014's Unfriended, which is all played out on a computer screen. Enjoy my chat with David about the internet. So I would like to welcome to the podcast for the very first time, David Smith. How are you?
Hello, it's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on. So would you like to introduce yourself to listeners and let them know what you do?
Yes, I'm David. In real life, I'm a psychology lecturer, but what I do on the internet is I host the Horror Cult Films podcast. I also write for the website, and that's pretty much it. I also tweet as Horror in a Tweet.
So your kind of field of expertise, psychology, do you feel that kind of when you're watching horror films? Because like I have a psychologist friend, and whenever she watches horror films, she's a little bit like analytical about it. Do you find that about when you're watching horror films?
Not so much about the characters, but a lot of the time I'm sitting for thinking about themes and going, oh, that would be a good one to recommend to students. Yeah. Like the other day I was watching The Mist. Mm-hmm. Now, first when I saw The Mist, I wasn't huge on it, but this time I was going, oh, wow, this really kind of shows group identity processes, how quickly everyone's turning on each other, how they're all sort of clashing around the 40 figures, and suddenly it became a much more interesting movie than I thought in 2006 or whenever that came out.
Okay, that's one film I actually haven't seen, so I'm going to have to check that out. It's on my to-be-watched list, as is a lot of things, so I just need to get around to seeing it.
Oh, it's absolutely ace. Without any spoilers, the ending is especially ace. You'll be like, oh, yeah. They just went there.
So how did you get into horror? And do you remember the first horror film you ever saw?
So when I was a kid, I used to like kind of kids' films with scary elements. Like my favourite movie as a child was Watership Down. So it was... It was that and Edward Scissorhands and like the E.T. and stuff. Like I wasn't really into my Disney ones or anything.
Right.
And that was kind of my formative ones. And because I had an older brother, I always sort of saw stuff that was a little bit too old for me as well. I remember seeing, I think Elm Street 3 would have been the first one that I saw. Mm-hmm. And then at high school, we did media studies in my high school, which I don't know how common that is across the UK, but we did a bit about horror films. I remember just being introduced to David Cronenberg through that and like seeing films like The Shining for the first time around then. So I just kind of grew and grew, you know?
Yeah. So you were quite like, you kind of sound a bit similar to me, that my gateway was almost Tim Burton-esque films. Mm. And I remember on CBBC in the UK, they had like Harriet Hyde, which was about this little girl that would turn into like a big monster. And they'd also have something called Monster Cafe. So it was very like childlike introduction to horror. But a lot of people I've interviewed have been like, oh, I saw The Exorcist at age 5. So in your psychological opinion, do you think that there is a difference in character when it comes to people that have been introduced at, you know, really absurd young ages compared to people who perhaps did the more gateway into horror?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, I'd sort of wonder what the motivation is for getting into it in the first place, because I'm thinking that as horror fans, something I think we tend to do is sort of connect with the outsider characters in these things, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe part of the appeal for it. It's like, maybe I'm overgeneralizing my own experience, but horror wasn't really the cool kids genre. It was kind of like the uncool kids genre. And I thought, I think maybe that's part of it. I mean, with really extreme stuff, I don't have any kids, but I couldn't really imagine showing my imaginary 10-year-old son or daughter. I couldn't really imagine watching The Exorcist with them, for instance. There's maybe an expectation they'll seek that kind of thing out without your knowledge, but I wouldn't be sitting down with them watching it. You know, I think I'd probably be a bit stricter with that than. Actually, my parents were quite strict. Thinking back, actually, all the sort of adult stuff I saw was while they were out. You know, it would be like a bunch of us, like one of her older siblings goes, "Ah, here's a VHS or something." But
yeah, I feel bad for my kid because, like, I mean, he's watched like Dracula and Frankenstein, like the old Universal, but they're quite tame, aren't they? So, and he knows about the monsters because I've got like merchandise everywhere. But I feel quite bad for my kid when he grows up and he wants to be like that sneaky, rebellious kid. And he's like, "Oh, I watched this film," and I'll be like, "Yeah, I saw that." Saw that when it first came out, and he'd be like, "Damn it." So let's get on to our subject for this episode. I pulled out the quite random subject of the internet. So what were your first thoughts when I told you this was the theme?
Well, my first thoughts were, I tried to guess what you would be picking, basically. I mean, as far as the theme goes, the internet's a really good one. You know, it's especially in the last 5-10 years, you know, we've had so many different horror films about the sort of potential bad bits of the internet. Like, I don't want to guess your age, but as someone in my mid-30s, you know, I remember when the internet was first. So remember when the internet was first coming out, you know, you've got your sort of early internet, where you've got these sites that take off, and, you know, some of them were quite rotten, for instance. And it's interesting just sort of seeing how quickly the technology's evolved, but also seeing the genre kind of address that. You know, I think for a lot of young people nowadays, if you're like 18 years old and you're watching something like Unfriended for the first time, which we'll be coming to obviously in a bit, I think it would be, you know, you couldn't really imagine what life would have been like before that could have taken place. And it's been interesting sort of watching these developments come out in real time and then going, oh, shoot. Like, the idea of, like, say you're meeting your friend down. In fact, even organizing meeting people full stop, it just seems like quite a sort of opaque system of, and we used to call people's houses and hope they were in.
Yeah, or we'd have to call their house phone and hope their parents don't pick up. It's so interesting because, like, I remember Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, he did a horror film about the dangers of chat rooms. For the life of me, I cannot remember what it was called. But it's so funny seeing, like, you know, if like an 18-year-old, like you said, looked back and watched that film, they'd be like, "What? Like, what is going on?" But like back then, there was a real. I mean, we were so stupid. Like, we'd go into stuff like Omegle and chat roulette and just chat with like the most random of people. And looking back, you're like, "Oh my God, that is so dangerous."
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, one of the films I was going to suggest, but I was like, "No, I won't. Like, I won't do that to you." Was Megan Is Missing? Because that is a really good example of the horrors of talking to people on the internet. And another good example of kind of different is Pulse. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about like basically something being shared through the internet. There just seems to be so many avenues that you can go down with the internet because it's so damn scary.
I've seen both of those. Megan Is Missing, that you're right, that is a grim watch, but it's a movie that seems to take off every so often. It became really big on TikTok last year, I think. So I agree, it's quite terrifying just thinking, all right, well, you know, when I was using Yahoo chat rooms and speaking to strangers, like, you know, it's on reflection, it's damn good that I wasn't groomed or anything, you know, wasn't speaking to the wrong people, because it's probably very, you know, it's probably very easy for people to exploit that kind of curiosity about technology.
Yeah, and then we've got the other corner of the internet that terrifies me, the dark web. It's funny how neither of us went down that route, apart from like the sequel of Unfriended, which I don't actually remember a lot about. But the dark web is something that terrifies me.
Yeah, certainly when you're hearing about, like, oh, you can hire an assassin.
Yeah.
That sort of thing's scary as hell. Or the idea of hackers, you know, not that not that I've got anything to hide on my on my laptop, but at the same time, you're also like, well, could someone like take all my money with a particular piece of software, you know? And if they did, what could you do about it? Or like, your entire internet history, the idea that we're always kind of vulnerable. I think that is potentially quite a good area for horror. Like I also can't remember much about Unfriended Dark Web either. Good point that neither of us picked anything like that, actually.
Yeah. The thing with the dark web, I always see these like unboxing videos, like they've ordered a box from the dark web and they don't know what's going to turn up inside it. And I think there was a horror film that did that, but it didn't do it very well. I think it was a Shudder one. But I would like to see something like that, a bit more kind of messed up. If we took Megan Is Missing and that kind of narration, I think that would be an amazing amalgamation. So let's start with your choice of film then. Would you like to introduce it and give us a brief synopsis, please?
Yeah, certainly. So Death of a Vlogger came to mind just because it's quite a small horror film. It's Scottish as well, which pleases me. And essentially, it's a story of an ill-fated vlogger who's played by the writer, director, producer, Graham Hughes. And he goes viral after him and his girlfriend start documenting what seems to be a haunting that's taking place in his little Glasgow flat. Mm-hmm. However, we've also got an investigative reporter on the side, Alice, who's calling bullshit and trying to get to the bottom of if he's manipulating the audience or if he is actually charting something very genuine in his living room.
And what made you choose Death of a Vlogger?
I think
apart from it being Scottish.
I think part of it is because it's a movie that was sort of overshadowed because Host came out very shortly afterwards. And, you know, I mean, Host was also absolutely the right film for the right time, right? And, you know, I think Death of Vlogger didn't really make that many end-of-year lists. It's also, I went to school with one of the people in it. It's not like we're not friends as such any longer. I haven't spoken to him in about 20 years, but it just kind of, it added an extra novelty to the film, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I quite liked it because it gave me Lake Mungo vibes.
Mm.
You know, it's set up at the very beginning. One of his friends sends him photos and is like, this is you in the background, you know, this is, and it's all like this spooky kind of foretelling of something, and it gave me very strong Lake Mungo vibes, especially with the whole mockumentary setup as well, which I love. I love mockumentaries. I love found footage. I really enjoyed it. I think it had a lot to say about social media, the internet, kind of how you can never quite trust the internet. So yeah, what did you think of the themes behind it, and what did you think was the main kind of tale?
Oh, I liked that it brought found footage to, I suppose, the sort of foundation of it, of what's real here.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering back in the day when the Blair Witch Project was first coming out, and, you know, a lot of the publicity around that was, oh, but they've done such a good job of faking it that maybe it's real. And I like that it was very consciously going back to this idea of, as an audience, we tend to believe what we're seeing. And in this case, while we have Graham hosting it, you know, Graham's also a vlogger in real life, so there's something quite interesting about seeing Graham the vlogger stroke filmmaker in real life producing a movie where he's also playing a vlogger stroke filmmaker. And like, I just sort of thought that these sorts of layers to it really worked. I liked that it had quite a sort of astir script, you know. It was quite minimalist in places. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of money spent on the scares. There wasn't a whole lot of money spent on like locations or anything. There wasn't many actors in it. But what it played to was just this sort of sense of what's real and how much do you believe what's on the web.
Yeah, I mean, that was the main takeoff for me, and especially when, you know, people read a lot of things on the web, or they watch a lot of these like YouTube videos, and they believe that that is like, that's the truth. There is no, if it's on the internet, it's the truth. It must be. I also liked it from the angle of looking at kind of the mental health behind these vloggers.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we know, the internet can be so fickle. You know, one day you're a hero, the next day you're taking, you know, really bad bashing from the internet. And I really like the way it explored the main character's mental health and the way he kind of flip-flopped between like, this is real, this isn't real, and kind of exploring his perception. Like, is it real? Is it not real? What's going on? And I get that a lot, especially you see it on stuff like Instagram, where you've got these like influencers and vloggers that do all these things, and even their perception of reality starts to morph. You know, it's not just the viewer, it's also the person putting out this.
Oh, yeah, because like, the thing is, his sort of mental breakdown was played very straight. They did a good job of making you feel for the character, despite that we have every reason by this point, firstly, not to like him, and secondly, to think that he's faking it as well. And I think that sort of character disintegration was done really well on here. I liked the sequence about the addictive nature of... I don't know if you might be hearing an ambulance go past in the background there.
That's all right. Adds to the atmosphere.
Yeah. I liked when we've got that social psychologist where it's clearly an Irish actor trying to do an American accent, but... I liked his sort of explanation about how dopamine works and the idea of positive reinforcement of, oh, you get a like and that makes you want to continue. But then talking about how, well, what happens when suddenly the thing that you're getting all this reinforcement from turns bad for you. And they did a really good job of sort of integrating these themes with the story.
I really liked this. And it's I hadn't heard of it before. Before you brought it up, so I really appreciated it, and especially it seems like even in 5 years it would still be like relative to what you know, a lot of the times, say when I talked about Dee Snider's film, that's not relevant now, whereas this film feels like put it out in 5-10 years and people are still going to get something from it. And I think that's a really good tale of a good horror film.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Because you're thinking about how, you know, with TikTok, we've now got even more intimate access to people's lives through that. And the follower count thing is still such a big part.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this case, I think there's something really nice about him sort of, from his perspective, at first, at least, we believe he's accidentally gone viral. And how this sort of, this push for infamy, for sort of infamy or even just hits, I guess, how that sort of underlies every decision that they make as it goes on. Like when they're hiring Steve. Now, when Steve comes into it, we have quite an interesting dynamic because we go, well, this guy's obviously a bullshitter. At the same time, when we've got the camera rolling, which we later on question if this is also a further manipulation, we have him talking about, well, we want to do two things, get to the bottom of this and make some money. But getting to the bottom of this is still presented as part of the quest. It's just the money is as important as it. So it created quite a nice bit of the amount of risks the characters were taking at that point in the story because they wanted the attention.
Talking of the characters, what is your stance on the character of Alice? I found her quite kind of half and half. Like I liked her tenacity, and I liked the way she was like, look, we have to debunk this because it's dangerous for other people to see this and think that they can get in touch with, you know, their dead husband. Or but at the same time, I found her quite abrasive and almost like, you know what, even if they are faking it, like, just leave them alone. Like, they're just putting out some form of entertainment. But what were your thoughts on that character?
I think I agree. I guess I was taking the side of, I've completely forgotten his partner's name in this.
Erin.
Erin, that's one. Yeah. I was sort of on Erin's side where she's saying, look, what he's producing here is just another type of art. Yeah. You know, yeah, it's fake, but so what? And I agree that whilst it was kind of exploitative, I didn't feel like there was enough there for us to be entirely on her side. I mean, partly, I guess, because we were implicated in the caper ourselves, because we've, you know, been following this guy for quite a while now, she's kind of presented almost as the antagonist in it, which is, you know, it's interesting in itself because you sort of want them to carry on lying, but then it's, but are they also lying to me about the lie that I think they're telling? So I went back and forth on my loyalty to her. I was like, you know, I sort of want him to get away with it, but then you're also like, oh, and he has been lying to me as well, repeatedly. You know, because you keep on going, all right, now we're getting the truth. oh shit, that's another lie. Now we're getting the truth. It's another lie. Yeah. I didn't quite believe the performance, but I think that's because the actor, I thought that she maybe looked too young for the role that we're getting.
Okay.
I was sort of thinking this is someone who's, I don't know, possibly in their 30s, but at the same time, I'm seeing them as being in their 20s. Mm-hmm. And I was also seeing them as also being presumably a very established investigative reporter at this point.
Yeah.
At the same time, I thought that as an aspect of the story, I really liked her. I really liked the scene where she's doing the bit with the doll in the house.
Oh yeah, that was really good.
That was really good.
Yeah, she was kind of like debunking the myths behind, you know, these kind of things. Do you think that Death of a Vlogger is kind of a commentary on the voyeuristic nature of internet and internet stars and their followers?
Oh yeah, I think there's a lot about the sort of power of relationships that followers form with them. You know, how we think that we know all our favorite people, but we're only seeing what they want us to see of them. Like particular celebrities that we might even form a part of our identity around, going, yeah, you know, I follow that person, I'm with that person, I'm, you know, I subscribe to whatever values they're putting out there. Mm. But at the same time, like how authentic that voice actually is.
Yeah, and at some point it gets quite kind of sick when we're watching their downfall, or we're watching them have, you know, like a mental breakdown or suffering with their mental health, like we see in Death of a Vlogger. And there's something quite sick about that as well, that mm-hmm. these people, that despite them almost giving up their privacy because of what they do, they're also not afforded privacy when they actually really need it. And it's kind of this thing of like, well, you gave it up, they're also human beings. So it's really difficult sometimes to see a human-like side to people who have put themselves on the internet in this way.
It's interesting because whilst it's a point where they need privacy the most, it's a way it still becomes quite self-perpetuating, right? Because once he's gotten shit for putting up his videos, the solution is to put up more and more videos where, you know, start apologizing because you know, this is all happening in public now. And, you know, after that apology, he's still going to put up other videos. And he's, you know, we see him having these conversations with Erin. There's a good line where they don't explore this further. And I was glad they didn't, where she's saying, can we talk about you getting help again? But it's just the usage of the word again in that implies a part of a backing story that this has probably happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. but we're not seeing that because we're only seeing the version of him that he's putting forward.
Mm. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, sorry, it's also just right there from the very first scene, you know, with that story about the paratroopers coming in, right? And, you know, what the idea of perception changing depending on context. And it's just how much of his life that we're not seeing. I just thought that whole thing was really, really interesting.
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes actually quite represents that is where he's going down the stairwell. And there's like a bike and it almost seems like we're in a time loop. What did you think of that scene?
So as I was watching this with my wife and she's like, where's the cut taking place? Cause we're trying to see I think it was as the camera swings, but it was very effective. Mm. Like it's an interesting contradiction actually, where we're watching this, we think he couldn't be faking this, but of course, objectively the whole thing's being fakes. It's a movie. But it's wondering, well, is this evidence that this is actually happening to the character? He couldn't fake it, but we have to accept the filmmakers themselves could. So of course he could. And I thought that scene was really good. I wasn't really a fan of the baddie in it. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't think the threat was characterized enough. It's sort of almost playing to sort of quick Japanese stereotypes that we're relying on. And that was one of the things that kind of, like, it's still a very good film, but that sort of pulled me out of it a little bit. I was going, okay, is this potentially slightly problematic for a start that we're using kind of Asian girl with long hair is, all right, well, we're falling back in that trope and we're just using what she's Japanese and therefore that makes the whole thing seem scarier. Therefore, I'm not liking that aspect. I wanted the baddie to be more characterized, to be more fleshed out, to have more of a clear-cut motivation. And I get that they couldn't really have done that because we're also meant to question if she's real to begin, if she's there at all. But
yeah,
yeah, that was an area where I think it fell short.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And as a fan of Japanese horror, saying that, it just felt a bit like, oh shit, lads, what can we make this quick? Let's do a long haired ghost. I think it would have been more interesting if they played a bit more with, like, especially because at the beginning where his mate shows him those shots, to kind of bring that back around almost and make it a very solid kind of loop. But sure, look, that's my really only complaint about this film. So would you recommend it to horror fans?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's well worth watching. It's an example of, like, there are obviously budgetary constraints. Like, when you see the newspaper clipping bits and, you know, they look like they're probably put together on PowerPoint. But at the same time, it shows that with a lot of budgetary constraints, with something that was, I think the entire thing was shot on a mobile phone.
Oh, wow.
With the exception of the VR seance sequence, you know, it shows that if you've got good characters and you've got like and you've got kind of an unpredictable narrative, and you can accomplish a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
So you know, did a lot with not a lot, and I would absolutely recommend it.
Yeah, I think exactly the same. I love films that utilize, that have some sort of constraints, whether it's environmental, whether it's situational, like in the pandemic, whether it's budgetary. I really love that, because it seems like that's when filmmakers' creativity is at their highest point, because they have to get around these kind of constraints. And so I love this as an example of that. And the fact that just, you can see the creativity, and, you know, maybe not with the ghost, but you can see the creativity behind it, and how well, you know, the script is, how well the characters are kind of set out. And I think it's a great exercise in filmmaking when you haven't got the budget of a James Wan production.
Something I was wondering about, actually, because I kind of went a bit both sides on this. So with the name of the film, Death of the Vlogger, and which apparently was going to be called Followers originally, but there's already a film called Followers. With the name and some of the sort of wraparound commentary at the beginning, where we're told that things go horribly wrong, there's a lot of dramatic irony being employed in this, and I was wondering, do you reckon, if we didn't know that things were going to go badly wrong for a character, we didn't have his death being advertised in the title, do you reckon that would have been do you reckon it would have been a fundamentally different experience for you?
I don't think so, funnily enough, no. Because, and I'm going to refer back to Lake Mungo, we know that main character's dead already when we go into Lake Mungo, but it doesn't make it any less enjoyable. I don't think we have to have a big twist or a big death, shocking death, for a horror film to be good. Why, what's your opinion on this?
Well, I was wondering if it was serving the purpose of saying, well, we're going to watch him do some at times quite horrible things, but if we know there was a consequence in advance, then I was wondering if that lets us still stay loyal to the character. I don't know. I mean, I think you're right that something like Lake Mungo still is a great example of how you can essentially say what's going to go on 90 minutes before it does, and it still has such an emotional impact when you see it.
Do you reckon it's kind of a meta-like commentary, the fact that we do know what's going to go on, we do know what it's going to go horribly wrong, but we still watch, just like people on the internet?
Yeah, because I suppose we have a pylon that is talking about, right? And there's maybe a bit of, he's getting his dues, but we're also like, well, we also know that he's going to die. And we, you know, we don't want to see that, but we do want to see a pylon. And, you know, maybe that is an interesting part of it, is playing with that irony.
Yeah. So kind of going from low budget to a bigger budget, not massive, but a bigger budget. So the movie I chose was Unfriended from 2014, which is all shot on a screen share, computer screen, on a MacBook. And it's directed by Levin Gabriadze. And it's actually the first feature film to be entirely set on a computer screen, which is quite interesting. And so we've got this setup of these high school friends whose other friend had committed suicide. We see it from the very get-go. We see like a grainy video footage. And they're all having this chat on Skype. And there's this strange figure that keeps appearing and they can't get rid of them. And as it goes on, they begin to experience these supernatural happenings all through the computer screen, which causes them one by one to commit suicide. What did you think of Unfriended?
So when you picked this one, my immediate reaction was, oh, damn, I don't like this film. But I actually really enjoyed it on rewatch. I thought it was fantastic. Like, when I was first watching it, I think I just found the characters a little bit irritating. Mm. Like, you know, there's a sort of tension between, you got to not mind seeing the characters die. So we have to make them kind of irritating, but then you also still have to spend a lot of time with them. Yeah. But on rewatch, I just thought, you know what? Being considerably older than the characters in this film, you sort of look at them acting like dicks, and but there's almost something quite endearing about that, you know? Yeah. It's because you think, well, so was I at that age. and I thought it was really creative. I think there was one which I think was made before this, which was all on what a video screen called the Collinswood story. I think that all took place on video screen, but it was far less ambitious. I mean, it was made in the very early noughties, so it was, you know, very grainy. Only one other website appears in it as well.
Right.
But it this was so creative with the way they're able to bring in the YouTube into it. They're able to use different websites to develop the story, where we see different social media sites. Now we've got the handy website that explains curses. You know?
Yeah.
And it was really refreshing to see where a lot of money must have been spent on it. It's really refreshing to see real websites as well. Mm. You know, they weren't just doing like online search or anything along those lines. They were like, no, we are using Google, we're using Skype, we're using Spotify, we're using YouTube, we're using Instagram in it.
Yeah, because I was watching it on my laptop, and at one point I was trying to figure out like what time it was. And I was like trying to X out of it, and it was a mess, me trying to get out of it. But that's what makes it so good, because I was like fully invested, whether, you know, I wanted to or not, but I was fully invested. Thing I like about it is it takes kind of like the traditional haunted house genre and brings it into the computer, which I really like. You know, this ghost, this spirit is able to go through everyone's computer and control them. And it even does like the light flickering thing. And because I love a good ghost story. It's like my second favorite genre, supernatural horror. And I quite like, I mean, the deaths were gory, especially, you know, Ken, who sticks his hand into a blender. I do love a good bit of gore. So what did you think was like the main morality tale? Because I do feel like Unfriended is a morality tale for the internet generation.
Oh, yeah. I think for me, it seemed to be about your own complicity within bullying.
Hmm.
I think the characters had that kind of disconnect between what they were doing and saying, well, everyone else was doing it as well, you know, sort of deferral of responsibility, right? You know, it's, yeah, we bullied the hell out of her, but we don't feel uniquely responsible, so it's not fair to use it against us. I thought that idea of their complicity was really interesting. I also liked the way that it turned out they were actually quite bad friends to each other as well.
Yeah. Although I felt kind of bad, because like when you're that young, you don't really know what friendship is, do you? You are arseholes, because when you're a teenager, you're just kind of out for yourself, which is fine, because that's what teenagers do. So I felt kind of bad for them at the same time. But also, I think younger generations need to realize how bad of a thing cyberbullying is. Mm-hmm. Because, say, in our day, when we didn't have, you know, internet or mobile phones when we were kids, if we were unlucky enough to be bullied at school, it was very much left at school. Whereas now they come home and it's on their mobiles, it's on their emails, it's on the internet. Like it's pretty rough.
Yeah, because I guess, because you've got your sort of good old-fashioned bullying, which is very much like a, you know, it's an entirely physical thing.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you'd still be worried about it while it's happening. You'd still be worried about what's going to happen at school tomorrow. But here, the idea of being consistently bombarded with that sort of stimulus is a really good pairing with Death of a Vlogger, actually, because, you know, both of them have this sense of almost like the characters are addicted to this as well.
Yeah.
And while I did have some problems with the way the scare scenes were done, I thought some of them were a bit convoluted because they relied on having multiple windows open at all times and so on. They still work some really good, really effective set pieces into that.
Mm. Yeah. What did you think of the antagonist, Laura?
So from the beginning, you know, we see, we know something pretty damn severe has happened because we see the footage of her, the thing of her killing herself. And I liked that we didn't, you know, I liked that, that we didn't really get confirmation of how she's able to do any of this. But I guess it was almost like that sort of Carrie thing. I think that's the point you made in the last episode.
I when I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, this is Carrie.
Because like as it goes on, it plays its trump card quite early, where we see the video of, like, you know, she's drunk and she shat herself, and how that would be the exact sort of thing that would be like, it wouldn't be forgotten at school. And you know, the idea of everyone talking about her shitting herself is bad enough, the idea of everyone talking about that and it's online, like, it just made the whole thing kind of even worse. So while we never actually get to meet Laura in it directly, I still kind of, I felt a lot for her. I was very invested in some form of justice for her. Like, the characters didn't deserve what happened to them, in as much as, you know, they behaved very badly, but at the same time, they didn't know what the consequence would be, and you know, they pay a pretty big price for it. But at the same time, I like that it does still underline that, look, this is totally irresponsible behavior, and you don't know what you can drive somebody else to do by bullying them. You know?
Yeah. I was quite sympathetic to Laura's spirit. I mean, I'm very much well known for being pro-ghost, pro-demon when it comes to horror. But I felt very sympathetic. And I kind of, even though I feel like the majority of the characters didn't deserve, I do feel that Adam was the one that did deserve it.
Oh, he was definitely the worst.
Yeah, because of his basically raping a girl and then forcing her to get an abortion. He definitely deserved it, but whereas I feel that, I don't know, it's a bit of a thing because you're like, okay, they're teenagers, they're stupid, they really don't think about the consequences of their actions. But at the same time, you know, Laura didn't deserve this. So I kind of like films that have you questioning the morality behind it, though.
Mm. Yeah, because with regards to, so Adam in it, from the narrative perspective, yeah, he definitely deserves it. At the same time, though, I'm also like, well, was Laura wasn't killing him because of that. You know, I mean, it was a horrible thing that he'd done, but Laura was getting revenge for herself. I suppose maybe if he could have explored that further of, you know, Laura's not just getting revenge for Laura, she's also getting revenge for all these other people that have been mistreated.
Yeah.
Because with the exception of Adam, did we hear about any of the others doing something horrible to somebody that wasn't also in the film?
No. It's very much centered on Laura. So Val told Laura to go kill herself. Blair was the one who originally filmed it. Mitch put it online. I can't remember what the other girl, what Jess did.
What did she do? Because she was I slipped my mind as well.
And Kenny, I can't really remember what he did either. He seemed to be like the most sympathetic character, but I could be wrong. But it was all very much centered on Laura, and kind of Blair was the main target because obviously she was the catalyst in all of this happening because she was the one that filmed it instead of helping her friend, because they were friends from childhood. Instead of helping her friend, she was the one that filmed it. So she was the catalyst. So obviously she was the main target of Laura's.
With Blair, I felt so disappointed in the character. And I mean that in a good way. You know, it's like at the by the end of the film, you know, where she's giving her sort of very tearful look, this is, you know, I didn't mean for any of this to happen, so on. Like, you know, I completely believed the character in that situation. I thought that she had learnt something from the whole experience. Although then you find out, wait, she hasn't been telling you everything. Yeah. And it's not that she deserved it because she didn't know what was going to happen. But at the same time, I was also like, ah, oh, Blair. And especially as she also had context the others didn't, because we've got a bit early on where she's saying, all right, well, Laurie was dealing with some stuff. Then Mitch is asking, well, what was she dealing with? And it's not confirmed, but the implication there was she was sexually abused by her uncle. Mm. And because she had this additional context for other things, other traumas that were going on in Laura's life, it makes her betrayal that much worse, because you know she could, you know, she knew that she shouldn't be doing something that was potentially going to result in someone being goaded and jeered, and didn't take any responsibility until very, very late on. But the fact that I had that kind of extreme of going from absolute sympathy for her to then that kind of disappointment, I thought that's a sign of a well-made movie. It's a sign of a good piece of characterization.
Absolutely. So do you think, like with Death of a Vlogger, that Unfriended is going to hold up, say, in 5-10 years?
It's a good question. I don't think it actually will as much. Okay. I think the reason I don't think it will is it's far more about... I think it's because the focus on it is about kind of how the internet facilitates personal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I guess with Death of Vlogger, it seems like that sort of forms of social media where people are, you know, sharing a lot more with friends.
Yeah.
Is a bit less popular now than social media, where it's about who you follow.
Yeah.
Like the sort of insight into influencer culture, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I think that strikes me as the area that's going to be explored more in horror films. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think certainly the bullying part of it is still going to be very relevant. And as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, I was like, you know, if I was a teenager and I saw this film, I think I would have gotten a lot from it. I think it teaches you to think about how you would respond to others online, you know, how you treat people anonymously, I guess, you know, because, well, while they do have a relationship with Laura in real life, it doesn't feel to them like they do. It doesn't feel real because we're doing it over the internet.
Yeah. I really think that there should be a class in school where they watch horror films that have morality tales, like Megan Is Missing and like Unfriended. Yeah. Although I don't know how much therapy these kids would have to go through after seeing Megan Is Missing, but sure, look. So would you recommend Unfriended to horror fans?
Absolutely, yeah. And for anyone who didn't like it first time, I would strongly recommend a second viewing as well. You know, as at first time, I wasn't impressed. This time I was going, you know what? I'm going to watch this more often. Now I want to see the sequel again.
Yeah, I want to go back and watch the sequel as well. Yeah.
It's also quite, like, just thinking about when it came out in 2014, I did not realise it was as old as that, actually.
Yeah.
And there's just sort of something about the, like, Host came out a couple of years ago, which is, you know, quite similar in terms of what it was doing. I think where Host was maybe more successful was the horror sequences still felt a lot more visceral, you know, because we're using Zoom and they weren't really expanding on the background lore. There wasn't much of a backing story to be figured out, then it didn't get bogged down in this multi-window thing. But at the same time, that kind of multi-window thing was just something I'd never seen done to that level before. And also, like, it was weird seeing a horror film that had almost no music in it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is always quite strange because a lot of the time the horror is amped up with the music. So it's kind of impressive that they do still have some genuinely tense moments. But you know what I found? You know, when the screen kept glitching, that's where I found it quite tense. Maybe because I was like, oh, stupid internet connection. but I found it quite like where you've got to have something in place of a soundtrack. That was a really good, even though it's quite a minuscule detail, I found that quite effective.
We also got the little hums every so often. We just got But yeah, it never spoilt the immersion.
Mm.
And I suppose because, like, you watched it properly by watching it on the laptop, I watched it on the telly. Yeah. But I'm thinking on the laptop, then you've got that sort of, like, when you do get the hums and things, it's not out with the experience of having a laptop anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah. If anything, it probably would have made it even better.
Yes, I would recommend watching it on a laptop. I quite like it just because, as I said, it's a ghost story. And I love a good ghost story. And especially one that kind of uses different mediums. I think that's really cool. So out of the two films, if you had to pick one, if someone was like, I want to watch a horror to do with the internet, which one would you pick?
So it goes sound snobby here. If a person was was like a much of a horror fan, I would recommend Death of a Vlogger. Right. If they're not, I think it's sort of someone who isn't really into horror, I think would much prefer Unfriended, because I think Unfriended it's faster, it's more creative,
yeah.
And I think you would be more likely to I think with horror fans, we tend to be more forgiving of budgetary constraints.
Yeah.
And I think Unfriended looks much more impressive. It's mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'd probably recommend Unfriended to someone if they weren't already huge on horror. If they're big horror fans but hadn't seen either, I'd probably see Death of a Vlogger.
Yeah. I like the two of them. And I think they make quite, I always say this, but I think they make quite a good double bill. But if someone had like my arm behind my back and was really twisting it, I think I'd choose Death of a Vlogger just because its potential for longevity. That even with new platforms, there's always going to be internet kind of personalities. And there's always going to be that dodgy area when it comes to exposing your private life to people. So I think that's why I'd choose Death of a Vlogger.
I'd agree. It's certainly more, I think, as saying earlier, I think it's more likely to date well or hold up over time, but I think it's also more thematically sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I can see where you're coming from with that as well.
Yeah. So what would you like to see in the future for internet-based horror films?
When I was watching the recent Candyman, and this also goes for some of the recent Ring movies, I was waiting to see viral challenges becoming a big horror thing. Like, it was weird to me that the most recent Ring film, or at least the most recent American one, didn't go down that route, because modern tech is really what I think you could, I think there's so much you could do with that, with whether it's Samara, as she's called in the US one, coming out of a mobile phone, or just the idea of it going viral on something like TikTok. I thought there's a lot of potential to that. Candyman could have done something similar as well with the Candyman challenge, for example. Yeah. So I think that's certainly something I'd like to see addressed more, viral challenges.
Yeah, that would be a good one. I would be interested in the short form, like you said, with TikTok, and kind of have something based around that, whether it is like a mini series of short form videos that I have seen done quite a bit with creators online. But I'd like to see it in like a proper kind of independent horror, I think, someone utilizing that short form genre.
It occurs to me, actually, it might be really good for the industry, because you've got quite a few big names in horror that started off with doing, like, here's a short that was a proof of concept.
Yeah.
Something like Lights Out or Saw as well. And I think something like TikTok could be really good for just getting that voice out there.
So not so much like a horror film based on it, but actually using the medium of...
Yeah, I've never TikTok. Really explored TikTok all that much.
I'm too old for TikTok. Like,
no, yeah,
I can't do it.
there's something I find quite interesting about TikTok. Excuse me, this is a bit of a leaving of a topic, but I think it's still relevant in terms of the way that people form their identities through videos. Because I remember hearing about the sort of trend of people doing like videos of you've got ADHD when. And then this kind of leading to a culture of self-diagnosis. And I think maybe there's something about that, the way that, maybe with so many different voices out there, if it's a bit of a double-edged sword here, because, you know, it's all right, well, you can potentially find your people far easier through social media. I think it's certainly very good for that. But at the same time, I also wonder if that also makes you more likely to try and conform to something, or more likely to say, oh, maybe that applies to me, kind of base an identity around something. I think that sort of tension could be quite good for exploration, like what people could potentially make for followers do.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. So thank you so much for coming on and chatting about the internet.
Absolute pleasure.
With me as we chat over the internet. but before we go, I always ask my guests, what is your favorite horror film?
Aye, so I was thinking about how best to answer this one. I think pound for pound, I think the best horror film of all time is The Shining.
Okay.
But I think the one that had the biggest impact while I watched it was probably Martyrs.
Right, okay.
Martyrs, it's a bit like Megan is Missing. It's an absolute, for anyone that's not seen it, it's an absolute buzzkill, that movie.
That's one way of putting it.
Very, very visceral, very intense. I've never seen a horror that's made me feel like that before. Yeah, I think The Shining is the single most impressive piece of horror cinema I've ever seen.
That's fair enough. I would agree with you there on Martyrs. I must give it another watch soon, because I really enjoyed it the first time round. But yeah, definitely one that if you want to kill someone's buzz, you'd be like, ah, just put on Martyrs there, would you? So thank you so much for coming on and chatting. And if people would like to find you on social media, you want to give your handles?
Yeah, certainly. So I am Horror in a Tweet. So I'm on Twitter. That's my Twitter handle, I believe the name is. And I don't really use other social media. So find me there or on the website, horrorcultfilms.co.uk.
So that was my chat there with David Smith about horror films involving the internet. And we chatted about 2019's Death of a Vlogger, as well as 2014's Unfriended. So what did you think of our choices? Do you think they accurately kind of portray the horrors of the internet? Or do you think there is another film which does it a lot better? Let us know on our social media. So Twitter @what_scream, there's Facebook and Instagram as well, and Letterboxd as well. I hope everyone had a really nice festive period and holidays, whatever you ended up doing. I hope it was really peaceful for you. And I'm really excited to now be starting 2023. I hope it's going to be a good year. Fingers crossed, lots of great horror. Megan has just come out, so I'm really excited to see that. The trailers for Evil Dead Rise, as well as that Dracula film with Nicolas Cage. Why can't I remember its name? Okay, complete brain fart. And I've been like, I'm so excited to see it. And now Renfield. Here we go. So super excited for 2023's releases. We've also got Scream and The Exorcist as well. I think it's going to be a good year for horror. I hope everyone is enjoying the start of 2023 and being kind to themselves. January is a very difficult month. And as always, stay horrific. Goodbye.